This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
You know what you won't get when you support independent media and pledge your support at rabble.ca/donate? No tote bag, no pens, no mugs. It's not a swag thing. Pledging at rabble.ca/donate keeps Rabble's news and views for the rest of us surviving and maybe even thriving. Yes, your donation at rabble.ca/donate could win you a cool prize, but nothing as cool as strong community media. That's rabble.ca/donate. See you there.
Welcome to the Africa Files podcast. I'm Heather Yunt. The continent of Africa is still the least urbanized part of the world, but that's rapidly changing. UN Habitat predicts that by 2030, 50% of Africans will live in cities. That number is more than the total number of city dwellers in the entire Western Hemisphere today. But according to UN Habitat, unlike other parts of the world, Africa's rapid urbanization is a result of poverty. The result is an increase of urban dwellers living without access to basic services like adequate housing, water, and sanitation. Timothy Gajenga is a lecturer of peace studies at Tangaza College, Catholic University of Eastern Africa in Nairobi. He argues that the living conditions of African cities are directly linked to recent protests across the continent. Last year's revolutions across North Africa made headlines in North America, but protests broke out in cities across the continent. In Gabon, thousands of opposition supporters took to the streets in the capital last winter. 18 people were killed in Malawi during anti-government uprisings sparked by fuel shortages, and one protester was killed in Mozambique when police crushed a workers' protest last spring. To find out more about this link between urban poverty and these protests, I reached Timothy Gajenga in Nairobi, Kenya.
Can you tell me what life is like for the average resident of Nairobi?
Nairobi is divided into... We have an area for the rich, and we have an area for the poor, you know, where poor people live in slums because they cannot afford transport to their places of work. So they live near the industry area, near their workplaces. So we have areas for poor people, that is slums, and we have areas for rich people, that is in, good places.
And in terms of the trends, what is changing about life in cities like Nairobi?
What is changing is like Nairobi, we have areas which were formerly occupied by poor people, slums. We are now seeing tall building coming up. We are seeing evictions, poor people being evicted so that they can build modern houses, businesses. At the same time, we are seeing, many people migrating from rural areas to Nairobi to come and look for better life. So actually, life is changing to us for the poor. And for the rich, you know, they are becoming richer. The gap between the rich and the poor is becoming bigger.
And as that gap grows between the rich and the poor, what do you see as the most concerning effect that has on the poor in cities like Nairobi?
As the gap between the rich and the poor increase, what we are seeing is more suffering. The rich becoming more insensitive to the needs of the poor. And when the lives of the poor are ignored, what we are seeing is poor people coming together. You know, they form a kind of an identity, and they start fighting for their life. They start now agitating for change, and that brings liberation. We are seeing poor people are not able even to make to their places of work because of increase in cost of living. Recently, we witnessed so many demonstrations, workers calling for strikes. So we are seeing a kind of poverty forming a kind of an identity. We are seeing now poor people now rising up and demanding their rights. So we are seeing a kind of a movement where people are becoming more informed and fighting for recognition.
Can you give me some examples of some things that poor people have rallied around to fight for?
Example is, one is increase in fuel prices. their poor people are not able to afford fuel for their basic use. And what you're saying is that poor people are now, you know, demanding to be, you know, they want fuel prices to go down. We witnessed a number of strikes. Even lecturers the other day called for a strike. We witnessed even medical doctors calling for strike because they cannot, you know, the living standards have gone too high. And if doctors can call for strikes, if lecturers can call for strikes, what about the poor people?
And have these strikes, have they come to anything? Have they been effective?
Well, in a way, they have been effective because the government has come in and has promised to address some of these issues. Like what we are seeing today, even in our newspapers, the government is promising to lower down the fuel prices. And I think that is a response to what the poor people are fighting for. So the strikes, though they are not very effective, but the government is listening, and we are seeing the government doing something to address the issues that the poor people are facing.
Now, have these sorts of strikes and things like that, have they been happening in other African cities too as a result of some of these disparities between the rich and the poor?
I don't think the situation is different. Only that here in Kenya, you know, the media is bringing these issues out. But even in other countries, poor people are fighting because of high food prices, like in Uganda, in Egypt. So the problem in Kenya is not unique to Kenya. Even other countries are facing the same problem.
Now, you mentioned things like high fuel prices, high food prices. What are some of the other issues that the poor people living in Nairobi face on a day-to-day basis?
The other issue is the housing problem. What we are saying is that as new estates come up, as the gap between the rich and the poor widens, what we are seeing is that the landlords are increasing the houses. And poor people are now moving from their houses and they are looking for cheaper houses. So housing is a big problem. The other issue is affordability of basic services like water. Like in Nairobi, people are paying a lot of money to buy water. Because those who have money have dug boreholes and they are now selling water. We've seen trucks selling water to areas where we do not have water.
And now in the papers that you wrote for the e-zine, you drew some connections between the hard living conditions and some of the larger political events that have gone on recently. Can you tell me a little bit more about this relationship that you see?
Now, there is a strong connection between poor living conditions and liberation. Because there is something in us. When we are oppressed, we are forced to, something inside us forces us to act. We must act so that we can overcome the challenges that are confronting us. And when it comes to poverty, poor living conditions, people must act. What you are saying, like what we saw in Tunisia, people were suffering, they could not afford the basic services, poor people could not tell their way out in town, in Tunis. The same is happening even here in Nairobi, where hawkers are not allowed to sell their wares. The same happened in Egypt. People could not withstand the conditions they were going through. People could not withstand the sight of still rich people enjoying their wealth, enjoying their sweat, benefiting from the struggles that poor people are going through. They could not sit down and watch and wait. So they had to do something. And even here in Nairobi, we are seeing such protests. You know, poor people fighting for when it comes to demolition. They just don't sit and wait for bulldozers to come and bring down their structures. So they are fighting for their rights because it is something inborn that one must respond. One must do something in order to stop more frustration.
And what do you see determines that breaking point, that when the buildup of the frustration gets that high that it leads actually to revolt and revolution?
Now, what happens is that when frustration is shared by many people, it forms a kind of an identity. Identity is a driving force. When people can share same feeling, same concern, it becomes a force. A force that cannot be stopped. Now, poverty, when people are oppressed by poverty, when people are oppressed by the rich, when the people are oppressed by their government, now that oppression, that frustration triggers them to act. When that frustration is shared by majority, and that becomes now the breaking point.
So do you see it as a direct correlation between poverty and revolution? Is it necessary to have one in order to have the other?
No, what I can say is that actually revolution must have some energy that is driving it. Revolution without energy, you know, the driving force cannot bring change that people want. And where do people get this energy? They get this energy because of their common concern. I would say that the two must go hand in hand. That frustration, that energy, that driving force, it energizes the revolution.
And is it possible that the conditions for the poor can be so bad that they hinder any attempt at revolution? And what I mean by that is that if transportation is an issue, or if safe drinking water is an issue, or access to healthcare, if that is so difficult, does that hinder the movement? Because people need to get to a place in order to protest, people need to be healthy in order to protest to an extent. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what I would say is that at times, poverty, extreme poverty, can hinder revolution. Because what happens is that the rich can hijack the revolution process. When people do not have water, the rich can take advantage of that. Because poor people need water. Poor people need food. And if they cannot afford, if they don't have the means, then those who are in power can take advantage of that and can derail, actually can divert the course of revolution.
What do you foresee will happen as a result of both these revolutions, the revolution in Egypt, as well as the protests in other African cities? What will the result of that be in terms of the living conditions in the cities?
Now, this is a very tricky question, because the question that you need to ask yourself is, who is leading this revolution? Like in Egypt, actually they wanted to get rid of the military government. But now what have you seen? The same government, the same military is still in control. Now look at what happened in Libya. They got rid of Gaddafi, but now who is in charge? The challenge is that the revolution could have a noble cause, but those who take over will determine whether there will be change or not. Now let me give an example of what happened here in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
We had the former regime, the Moi regime. People were oppressed. People became so poor. Their rights were denied. But when NACI government took over, the leaders, those who took over, had a vision for this country. And they were able to drive the country forward. The economy, we saw the economy grow. We saw free education. We saw other benefit. Now, the challenge and the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who is leading this liberation? Because we can have a good liberation, we can have a good change of government, but hooligans may take over the government. And when hooligans take over, then we do not expect any gain from liberation.
What do you see needs to be done? What do you see as the way forward from here for Nairobi, for Cairo and Egypt, for different cities and countries around Africa?
Now, what we need first is educating people. Education is power. Education can liberate people. When people are liberated, they cannot be shortchanged by those who are in power. But when people are ignorant of even of their life, they will continue being oppressed. They will continue being bought by those in power. The other thing is we need a common goal. And this goal should be shared by all. It should be shared by the poor, those who are in power. Actually, the goal, the common goal, it should act as a magnet to pull all of us towards that common goal, a goal for a common good. The other thing is respect for human life. When human lives are not respected, then we cannot see change. So all this needs to be put into consideration if revolutions in Africa are going to bring any change.
Well, thank you very much again.
Okay, asante sana. Have a good evening.
That was Peace Studies lecturer Timothy Kajenga in Nairobi. Africa Files is a network of volunteers committed to promoting alternative perspectives of African issues. You can check out more and read our monthly e-zine at africafiles.org. I'm Heather Yunt. Thank you for listening.